So today we'll continue on wireless LANs and introduce how the MAC protocol works for data transfer for wireless LANs. That is, how do we make sure that only one person transmits at a time? So, for the assignment, because the assignment has been released, make sure you have a look at the assignment, form your groups, and this afternoon we'll discuss that, and I'll ask you for your group members, and we'll deliver the access points to you. So, let's talk about the assignment this afternoon. Make sure you've read it before the next lecture. We saw when we use wireless LANs that there's a process of discovering access points and joining access points. That is, when you turn on your laptop, somehow you need to know that there's an access point nearby, and one way is that that access point broadcasts beacon frames. When you receive a beacon, then you immediately know that there's an access point. And once you know about an access point, you can associate or authenticate and associate with that access point. And once that's finished, you can start transferring data. But there are some rules as to how you can transfer data and when. And that's what we'll go through, the medium access control mechanism. The aim of the MAC protocol is for efficient, robust, and fair data transfer. Efficient, because we're using a wireless link and there are scarce resources for a wireless link, that is, we only have a limited amount of frequency available or bandwidth available, we want to make efficient use of that to transmit our data. So minimize the overheads, for example. So we spend a lot of time transmitting data as opposed to sending a lot of headers and wasting time. Efficient, get fast data transfer. Robust, because we have a wireless medium, there's chance of errors. That is, we send some bits and some of those bits are not successfully received at the receiver. Because of interference from other obstructions, because if we move, so with a wireless medium, there's a higher chance of errors than a wired medium. Therefore, we have a medium access control that can handle those errors, that will deal with those errors. And also fair. That is, we must share the medium amongst multiple users. So we want to give each user equal access to that medium, to be fair amongst those users. So there are some trade-offs. See that we can't, to be fair, if we want to be fair, that may result in some in terms of efficiency. In the original 802.11 standard, there are two approaches for transferring data: distributed function, coordination function. DCF and some variations is the most commonly used, and in the wireless LAN products, then PCF was not even implemented because it was complex and seen as not as useful as the original DCF. Since the original standard, there have been some extensions, but they still base a lot on this DCF procedure, the distributed coordination. And that's mandatory in all wireless LAN products. Your laptop, your access point implements DCF. It may not implement this PCF procedure. And therefore, we're going to focus only on DCF. PCF is some optional extra, which we're not going to talk about. So with DCF, we have some different mechanisms in place. Some of them we may have heard of. CSMA, Carrier Sense Multiple Access, is something that was developed for Ethernet or used in original Ethernet networks. We'll see there's a concept and DCF is mandatory. All devices must implement that. The aim of this DCF, this distributed coordination function, is to coordinate who transmits. And it's distributed in that all nodes in the network participate, as opposed to one central node telling us when to transmit. Point coordination function has the access point telling the laptops when to transmit, but in DCF, everyone participates on an equal basis. The aim of DCF, of course, we want to be efficient, fair, and robust, but the MAC scheme is to allow one node to transmit at a time. Why? Well, we know in most cases, if two nodes transmit at the same time, from a receiver's perspective, if it receives both transmissions overlapping, the receiver will not be able to receive either of those transmissions. That is, we have a collision of those transmissions. And that's a bad thing, because if two nodes transmit to me, I cannot understand either of those transmissions. Eventually, that data transmitted will have to be retransmitted, because I did not receive it. Retransmissions are bad, or we want to avoid them, because they take time and lead to inefficiencies. So, the aim of the MAC protocol is to make sure that only one node transmits at a time. It's distributed among each node, this DCF function, and they all implement the same procedures and rules. In DCF, clients and access points are the same. That is, my laptop runs or implements DCF, so does the access point out in the corridor. We don't distinguish between an access point and a laptop, or an access point and a client. In terms of the data transfer, they are all equal. So sometimes we'll just refer to them as stations and not say whether it's an access point or a client. Just say, okay, there are five stations in our network, each of them trying to transfer data. One of them may be an access point. In terms of how the protocol works, there's no difference between an access point and a client. Within DCF, there are two what's called modes of operation, basic access and RTS-CTS. We'll go through basic access and then explain what RTS-CTS is after we've covered basic access. And say you can use each mode. But first, before we explain how it works, we need to say a little bit about how we transmit frames, or what's the structure of frames, and also the addressing used in those frames. So firstly, the structure of the frames. There are four basic data frames, or four frames used for data transfer. For management procedures, there are frames like beacons, probe request, probe reply, authentication request, and so on. There are specific types of frames. For data transfer and with DCF, there's a data frame, which of course contains some data and has a header. It also has extra information, but at the end of that frame. We will see that it's quite simple in that we send a data frame, the receiver sends back an acknowledgement. And we've seen such protocols before. So there's a special type of ACK frame. And when we look at the second mode of operation, there's these two additional frames called an RTS and CTS. Request to send, clear to send. Give some typical sizes of those frames. For example, the data has a header and plus some data and the trailer. The header plus trailer, which we consider the overhead, may be about 34 bytes. It can vary. There can be some optional fields, so it's not always exactly 34 bytes. But that's the typical size we're talking about 30 to 40 bytes of header and trailer. The data, or the payload, the real information we carry in that frame has a maximum size of 2,312 bytes, but in practice is often limited to 1,500 bytes. So there's a maximum size of this frame. RTS, CTS are quite small frames. They don't carry data, they just can carry some important information to tell the other side what happened. So maybe around 40 bytes or 20 bytes for the RTS frame. We'll see some examples of those frames. So typical sizes, but not exact always. This is a little bit more detail of the data frame. It shows in the green parts the header and the trailer, and the blue part, the frame body, is the actual data. And at the top it gives numbers, the number of bytes for each field. So our header is structured into multiple fields which have different meanings. For example, and we won't go all through all of them just now, we'll explain them as we explain the protocol, but for example, you see A1, A2, A3. These are addresses. We have address fields. If you remember the IP datagram, there's a source address and a destination address. In an Ethernet frame, there's a source address and a destination address. In an 802.11 header, there's a source address and a destination address, and a third address often, address 1, 2, and 3. In fact, in some cases you can have a fourth address. We'll look at addressing in subsequent slides, but how it works is that we have a source address, the next or immediate destination address, as well as the final destination address. That's why we'll often have three addresses in the frame. A fourth address is if we wanted to, for example, connect two access points together. That is, and that's referred to as wireless bridging. Connect my laptop to the access point in my home and connect my access point in my home to directly to the access point of my friend's home to have a wireless connection all the way through. So sometimes a fourth address is used as well. There's a sequence number, a 12-bit sequence number, and a fragment number. So we may fragment frames, or we may perform fragmentation and reassembly, break it up into smaller fragments. Therefore, we have a fragment number which counts, is this the first fragment, the second fragment, or so on. And also a sequence number, is this the first data frame, or is it the second data frame, and so on. The end, the trailer, is a frame check sequence, which is error detection using a CRC error detection code. That is a 32-bit sequence that allows us to detect if there are any errors inside the frame. So when we receive the frame, we compare the received data with and apply the CRC check to check whether there are any errors in the received frame. Similar to what a parity check does. A parity check is just simpler, but detects errors in the frame. Duration field we'll see later when we look at RTS-CTS. We'll refer to that. The frame control field we'll look at in a little bit more detail, which is divided into more parts. So this shows the frame control field, which was 2 bytes in length. It's broken into even more fields. So, in fact, there are multiple bits to indicate different meanings of this particular frame. For example, what protocol version are we using? What is the type of frame? Is it a control frame? Like an ACK frame? Is it a data frame containing data? Is it a management frame for setting up the network for a beacon or a probe request? So the type field indicates the type of frame. Subtype, within each type, there are some subtypes. So we can have management frames including probe requests, probe replies, beacons, and so on. The control frames include acknowledgements, RTS, CTS. So it's just a 4-bit value which indicates the specific type of frame. Something about fragmentation. If we use fragmentation, we will set the more flag field to 1 to say that, okay, we've applied fragmentation and there are more fragments to follow. Whether there's this is a retransmitted frame or an original frame, some options for power management or power saving. WEP is for security, whether that is on or off. And there are a few other fields there we can look at or we'll either mention or are not so important for our discussion now. We'll look at the fields, or remember that there's to DS and from DS. We'll refer to them shortly. So, we mentioned that there are 3 or possibly 4 addresses in a frame. What are they used for? First, each address uses the normal IEEE 48-bit addressing scheme. Same as Ethernet. As we've seen, I think, last week, if you look on the back of the access point or look at the configuration of the access point or your laptop, you'll see it has a MAC address, which should be a unique address for that device. All of the addresses sent in the frames are MAC addresses, 48-bit values, or 6 bytes. 3 of the 4 addresses available in the data frame are commonly used. Where we saw address 1, 2, and 3. They are the address of the client, the wireless LAN client, the address of the access point it's sending via, and usually the address of the destination LAN client. And we'll illustrate that with some examples. Here's an example. So up the top we have some clients, some wireless LAN clients, 2 access points, and we also have a wired LAN. So in this case, my client with address A2 wants to send send data to a computer LAN with address A3, but it needs to send via the access point. Then first, let's say A2 is my laptop, and I want to send to this computer, the destination. And the connection is I'm going to send via the access point out there, and then the access point has a cable to a switch somewhere downstairs, and that switch has a cable that comes up through the wall into this computer. So that's the configuration of our example network. So, first, I need to know the address of this computer. If I want to send data to this computer, I need to know its MAC address. How do I know its MAC address? Normally, if I know its IP address, I can find its MAC address. And we haven't covered that in any detail, but you will cover it in a network lab soon. You can read about address resolution protocol, which will map an IP address to a MAC address. But somehow, the source computer needs to know the address of the destination. If you want to send data to the destination, you need to know its address. So let's assume my laptop knows the address of this computer, the MAC address. So A2 knows the address A3. I also, because I'm going to use wireless LAN, need to know the address of the access point that I'm going to send via. And I know that because I've associated with that access point. When I turned on my laptop, I received a beacon from the access point, and inside that beacon was the address of that access point. So I immediately discovered the address of the access point. So my laptop knows the address of the access point, A1. If I want to send data to this computer, I need to know the address of this computer, which is A3. I know my own address, which is A2. So when I send a data frame, there are three fields in the header, A1, A2, and A3, and they take these three values. That is, the header will be constructed of this data frame where A1 field has the address of the access point, A2 field the address of my computer, and A3 the address of the destination. So we could say my computer is the source, the access point is the immediate destination, this computer is the final destination. That's where the data is eventually being delivered to. Those addresses are used and put inside the data frame header. I will send my data frame to the access point. The access point will receive it and realize, okay, I am the immediate destination. The final destination is this computer. So the access point would send it across our wire network and eventually it would be received via the switch to this computer. But that's not part of wireless LAN, but that's what the access point would do on the wired network. This wired network, if you remember from one of our earlier slides, is referred to as the distribution system for distributing the rest of the network. Coming in the other direction, this computer sends back to my laptop. Again, we'll use, when this computer sends to the access point, it's not using wireless LAN, it's using Ethernet. The source address of that Ethernet frame is that of A3. So let's say this computer doesn't know I'm using wireless LAN, it just knows that it wants to send a packet to the computer with address A1, my laptop. This computer has address A3. It creates a normal Ethernet frame, source address A3, destination address A1. This is an Ethernet frame sent from this computer. It goes across the Ethernet network to the switch, and the switch must know to reach A1, send to access point A2. When A2, the access point, receives this Ethernet frame, it must, well, let's draw the frame. The source address is this computer. Is A1. That is, we want to send some data from this computer to my laptop. This computer doesn't know I'm using wireless LAN. That's hidden from this computer. It just knows that my computer is somewhere on the local area network. It doesn't know whether it's using wireless LAN. So it creates a normal Ethernet frame, sends that, it would go to this switch, eventually to this switch, because the switches know where to deliver the frame to reach the destination, and send to this access point. When the access point receives the frame, the destination is A1. Of course, is not A1. But the access point knows that there's a laptop associated with me which has address A1, because previously my laptop associated with that access point, and the access point keeps track of the associated laptops. So when this access point receives a frame destined to A1, it knows, okay, now I need to send that frame using wireless LAN to A1. So the access point receives the frame there. It's a new frame. Has the data, the trailer, and the header. And inside the header we have three address fields. Let's say we have the original source, A3. We have immediate source, because this is a frame by the access to A1, immediate source is A2, and the destination is A1. So the frame is actually coming from A2, but in fact it originally came from A3. That's what's carried here. Right, this is just the name I invented here, immediate source. There are three fields or three addresses carried. The one on the LAN, the client, and the access point. When the client receives this frame, it knows, okay, it came from the access point, but actually the data came from computer A3. So each frame, another way we can think of it, each frame sent across the wireless LAN contains the client address, the final, or the address of the client on the LAN, A1 and A3, as well as the access point address. If we're going in this direction, we have the access point address. In this direction, we also have the access point address. And the next slide shows a case of sending to another wireless LAN client. Here we're sending from one laptop to another laptop associated with two different access points. I'm sending to a laptop which is downstairs associated with a different access point. Source is my address. I'm sending it to the access point out in the corridor. Eventually going to be delivered to this client. That's the final destination address. So we have three addresses inside the data frame. Let's show an example of that. And this is from the example last week. Last week when the last task, everyone was downloading a file from a website. So we got multiple people to download via the one, hopefully the one access point. And I captured that on my laptop. That is, when you were transferring data, my laptop was capturing all the frames that you were sending over the wireless LAN. And this is some of them listed in Wireshark here. We'll just identify or pick out one of the frames. I don't know who the addresses actually are. That is, I'm not sure whose address this is or this one, but this was some of the, either one of the access points or one of the laptops in the class. So at this time, this packet here, we have a source and a destination, but if we can see those three address fields. So if we look in the, I'll zoom in more. So I've selected that one packet, and now this frame in the structure, it gives the different headers, but this one referred as the radio tap header is not a real header in the frame. It just gives some information about the radio characteristics, like the channel that we used. The Ethernet header, or the wireless LAN header, sorry, of the data frame is the one that I've selected, IEEE 802.11 data. So if we expand that, it gives us the values of those header fields of that frame. The type and subtype, okay, this is a data frame. Frame control, the version, some flags. More fragments, no, there are no more fragments, which means this frame is either the last fragment or that no fragmentation was used. That is, it's the first and last fragment. Is it a retry? No, it's the original frame. It's not a retransmission. There's no power management being used or configured. There's no security or wireless protection applied. IP addresses. See, we have three addresses here. Destination, source, and BSS ID. So the BSS ID is the access point address in this case. So we have the three addresses. So it's coming from, and we don't know which one's the wireless LAN address and which one's the wired LAN address, but one of these is a LAP, not the source of the destination. We'll find out in a moment. So we've got an address of the final destination, the original source, and the access point included in there. Fragment number 0 more indicates no fragmentation was used. More fragments equals 0 means there's no more fragments. This is the first fragment, therefore there's no fragmentation. And a sequence number then. One of the flags indicates 2D or 2DS or from DS. And this will tell us what direction the frame is going in. It's these two bits. The last or the rightmost bit, the 0, indicates 2DS is 0. It's not to the distribution system. The distribution system is the Ethernet network. It is from the distribution system, which means it's from a client on the LAN, the wired LAN, going to a wireless LAN station. If 2DS is 0 and from DS is 1, then it means this frame is coming from the distribution system, coming to the wireless LAN. And it's summarized there in Wireshark. Frame is from DS to a station via access point. It's coming from a computer on the LAN going via the access point to the laptop. That means this is the address of a laptop, the destination. This is the address of some computer on the wired LAN. And this is the address of the access point. So, and these flags indicate which direction the frame is going in. Is it going out of their wireless LAN or to the wireless LAN? Yes, to the wireless LAN, to the wireless station. It's so we can distinguish between the wireless LAN and the distribution system. Let's say the Ethernet wired network. This one is from DS, from the distribution system, therefore it's going to the wireless LAN. There are some special cases where it may be going between two wireless LANs, but we will not see that. So we can see some of the fields in the header. Inside the packet is the actual data. Or inside the frame is the data. Header size, in this case, 24 bytes. Down the bottom it says this header is 24 bytes in length. It doesn't include the trailer, the frame check sequence. We have a 32-bit frame check sequence, which is a 4-byte trailer as well. Okay, so any questions on the addressing? We have those three addresses, which is slightly different from what we see in most other protocols, where we just have the source and destination. Returning to our slides, I may refer back to some of the header fields later as we describe the how the protocol works. Okay, so let's just go back to this case. So let's say, and a common case is that I don't want to send to a computer here, I want to send from my laptop to the Google web server out on the internet. It's this case. except the destination is not a PC here. Imagine this is a router that connects to the next network. From the Ethernet or the data link layer perspective, a router is just another computer on the network. This is our Ethernet network, our layer 2 LAN and the wireless LAN. If this was a router, let's see how it would work. Okay, my computer wants to send to the Google web server. It knows the IP address of the Google web server. It would use its routing table to find out, okay, to reach the Google web server, I need to send to a local default router, a local router. And that local router would be this computer, or this device. No longer a host computer, but a router with another connection out. So for my routing table, I would find, okay, I need to actually send to this router. From the layer 2 perspective, or from wireless LAN and Ethernet perspective, the wireless LAN frame, the destination is this router. So it would be send a wireless LAN frame to the via the access point to this router. The router would receive the frame, look at the data, and then use the next link to send it to the next router, and so on. So it would be this case, but imagine this is a router. Okay, so now let's look at how do we actually send data over the wireless portion of the link. Given that we know about addressing, how does the distributed coordination function work? DCF. So the basic concept of this protocol, this is a MAC protocol, a medium access control. Control who can access the medium and when. The concept is a station, and remember, a station now refers to either a client or an access point. They're all the same from this protocol's perspective. A station will transmit if the medium is idle. That is, if no one else is transmitting, we say the medium is idle, and a station will transmit. That's the concept. If the medium is busy, if someone else is transmitting, then that station will wait until the other person has finished and then transmit. That's the basic concept. Same as in a group and you're having a conversation in a well-mannered group of people, then there'll be one person talking, the others will wait until they finish what they're saying, and then the next person will attempt to talk, and then the others will wait until they finish what they're saying. So you wait until the medium is idle, that is, no one's talking, and then you transmit. Of course, a problem arises even in our group. I finish talking, the medium becomes idle, two different people have something to say, or something to transmit, they both start talking at the same time. That's a collision. So we need some more details to see how to avoid that case. So the more specific operation, when a station has data ready to send, let's say I've clicked on a link on my web browser, which triggers my web browser to create an IP packet and eventually send that IP packet to my LAN device. So now I have data ready to send. I need to send it across the wireless LAN. What I do, or what the wireless LAN device, check that the medium is idle for some period of time. That is, no one else is transmitting for some period of time. And that period of time is fixed. It's a constant. And the constant is referred to as the DCF interframe space. IFS interframe space, some spacing between frames. And this is the specific interframe space used by DCF. We'll see some others shortly. DIFFs, in short. The value of this is fixed for a particular wireless LAN physical layer. 802.11b has a value which, from memory, is 50 microseconds. 802.11g maybe 30 microseconds. I can't remember the exact value, but constant values for each wireless LAN, physical LAN. So if the medium is idle for that period of time, that is, no one else was transmitting, I could not hear anything for that period of time, it moves at dips, that DCF interframe space, the medium must be idle for another period of time, some additional length of time called the back-off period. So again, there's some other period of time, and this period varies. It's not fixed, it's not constant. We'll see the importance of it as we go through some examples. But we have to have the medium idle for this extra period of time. If it is, that is, for the entire period of diffs, let's say 50 microseconds, plus the entire back-off period, which let's say maybe 100 microseconds, for that 150 microseconds, if no one else was transmitting, move to step three, is transmit. Start to transmit your data frame. If this is our data frame, transmit it over the wireless link. Once you've finished transmitting, so you've transmitted the entire data frame, and that just takes, well, the time it takes to transmit is simply the size of that data frame in bits divided by the data rate that we have. Maybe 11 megabits per second or 54 megabits per second. Transmit the frame. Once you've finished transmitting the frame, you want to receive an acknowledgement back from the receiver to say that everything was successful. Wait for the acknowledgement. When you receive the acknowledgement, the ACK frame, then that data transfer is successfully completed. That is, the piece of data in the data frame has been delivered to the destination. That's the general procedure. There are some more specifics that we'll go through, but that's the concept of the transmitter. Now, that's if the medium is idle. What if it's busy? During the diffs period, this step one, we want data to transmit. We check whether the medium is idle. Now, to check whether the medium is idle, we check whether we receive any signals. That is, my wireless LAN device, if I receive signals from other devices, then that's indicating the medium is busy, it's not idle. Those signals are because other people are transmitting. Now, those signals must be above some very small level. That is, if there's just some noise on the device, that I may ignore it. But if someone else is transmitting, I will receive some signals, and that will indicate to me the medium is busy. So if the medium is busy during this diffs period, then I will wait until it becomes idle again, which is the concept of wait for the other person to stop transmitting, start the procedure. We must have the medium idle for this period of diffs and then back off. Similar, if the medium was idle for this diffs period, it must then be idle for this additional back-off period. Let's say it was idle for the diffs period, and I'm checking, is there anyone else transmitting? No, no. And then someone else is transmitting during the back-off period. In that case, again, I must wait until the medium becomes idle. That is, I must wait until the other person stops transmitting. But there's some additional things that happen. We have some counter, some back-off counter. I will not try to explain that right now. Let's explain the back-off counter with an example. But we'll explain that there's a difference between if the medium becomes busy during the diffs period to during the back-off period. In both cases, once the medium becomes idle again, we must return to one of the previous stages and then try to transmit again. Yep. No, just these are the rules followed by one computer. The diffs period is some constant time period which, from my computer's perspective, the medium must be idle for that period of time. Let's say it's 50 microseconds. Then my computer, my wireless LAN device, would check that no one else is transmitting for that 50 microseconds. If someone was transmitting, then the medium is not idle for that diffs period. Similar with a back-off period, which is just some time period that we require the medium to be idle. If it's not, we'll have to wait for it to become idle and then try again. That's like in our conversation. I start talking. When I finish talking, the medium becomes idle, and the other two people, they may not start immediately to talk. Two people may have something to say. They may not start immediately. They may wait a short period of time, maybe 1 second, just to check whether someone else has something to say. And then if the medium was idle for some period of time, then they would start talking. That's what we're trying to implement here. Correct. If they have the same diffs period and the same back-off period, we'll still collide. And therefore we'll see the back-off period is the thing that varies and is designed to avoid this case that two people who have something to say will cause a collision by having a random back-off period. Just some definitions before we go through an example to illustrate this. We have inter-frame spaces. We've seen DIF, DCF inter-frame space. There's also a short inter-frame space, SIFS, with time between when the data is received by the receiver and until when it transmits the acknowledgement back. We'll see a short inter-frame space. And we have a back-off period. We'll explain the details, but basically it's a random time chosen. A random period within some range. That range, or the upper limit of that range, is the contention window, CW. Choose a backoff period between 0 and some upper limit. And that upper limit, CW, changes under different conditions. So we'll see that there's a minimum value of CW, the contention window, and a maximum value. We'll illustrate these in more detail with the example. So there are different parameters for the wireless LAN MAC, including diffs. What is the actual diffs? What is the value of this minimum contention window or maximum? And in fact, we have a slot time, which is used in back-off period. Let's use an example to explain them. The example I'll go through on the board, but it's going to look something like this, because we'll use real numbers on the board, and what it's going to show is these are three stations, showing what's happening over time. Here it's showing transmitting data. Here it's showing the different periods of time when we're not transmitting data, like the back-off period. Here is transmitting an ACK. And we'll see as one person is transmitting data, A is transmitting data, then other stations, which can hear that transmission, will detect that the medium is busy during this period of time and will act accordingly. So let's do that case, or illustrate how it works with an example with specific numbers. Let's get the right example. actually before the example, see very briefly the steps in the MAC protocol. Wait for the disk period. The media must be idle for this period of time, which means no one else can be transmitting. If there are only three computers in our area, and let's say B and C are doing nothing, then of course the medium will be idle for this period of time. If it's idle for that period of time, then it must be idle for this back-off period. What's the value of the back-off period? Well, that will depend upon some algorithm chosen from the specific example. It's idle for the back-off period, transmit the data. When you finish transmitting the data, in this case, so a receiver B, another station, receives the data. When a station receives data, it waits for a short interframe space, a SIFS, and sends back an ACK, the ACK frame. And when A receives this ACK frame, everything's complete. That is, this one data transfer operation has successfully completed. And then subsequent data transfer operations may occur. Let's say this sent 1,000 bytes, but I had 10,000 bytes to send, then I'd have to apply the operation again and again and again. But of course, the complexity comes in when other stations want to do the same thing at the same time. C wants to also, then it will have to wait. So let's illustrate that with this specific example. I'm going to use numbers from 802.11b. That is, the parameters for the MAC protocol are usually dependent on the specific physical layer, whether it's 802.11b or G or N or A. So there are different parameters. I'm using 11b because I've got the example. It's a little bit old, but the numbers are easier to calculate on the board, that's all. You could extend it to any of the other values. We have let's say we have 1,341 bytes payload or data that we want to send. And we have three stations. Client A, client B, and an access point. So we have three stations in our network, A, B, and the access point. At time T equals zero, because we're in time, then time T equals zero, let's say client A has data to send to the access point, and the data is 1,341 bytes. And client B has data to send to the access point at time 2:20. Destination equals access point. Data to send, again destination, access point. And at time 1420, access point has data to send to client A. So just a simple scenario where if we count time, and in this case we're counting in microseconds. We'll see that, why in a moment. At time zero, at the start of our scenario, client A wants to send data to access point. Short time later, at time 220 microseconds, another client wants to send data to the access point. And then at time 1420, the access point wants to send data to the client A. That's our scenario. Why is it that? Why did that arise? Well, maybe people press buttons on their web browser at those times which force data to be sent. What else do we have? Some parameters for the data rate and so on. Let's assume we're using a data rate of 11 megabits per second. And I'm using parameter values from 802.11b, so the diffs is 50. All the time units are microseconds. 10 to the minus 6. So here, 220 microseconds, 1420 microseconds. Diffs is 50 microseconds. That's a constant. SIFS, the short interframe space is 10 seconds. We have these other parameters. Slot time is 20. And we'll see that come into play when we look at the back off. We have these contention windows, the maximum and minimum values. Minimum 31, CW max 1023. We'll see these three come into play when we look at the back off. And finally, let's give the frame sizes. That is, we have data of 1341 bytes, but we also have a header and trailer. They may vary over for different frames. Just to make our calculations easier, I'm going to say a data frame has a header plus trailer. I'll just include it all together just because we want to know the size of 34 bytes. And the ACK is 14 bytes. So our data is in fact 34 bytes of header and trailer plus 1341 bytes of data in this scenario. Just to make things easier, so how long does it take to transmit our ACK frame in this case? Well, we have to calculate the total size and divide it by the data rate. There's an exception, or there's some finer details. In the MAC protocol, although data frames are often sent at the highest rate possible, such as in 11B, 11 megabits per second, in 11G, 54 megabits per second, RTS, CTS and ACK control frames often are sent at much lower data rates, even the lowest data rate. And I'm going to assume that my ACK is going to be sent, so we'll say the ACK rate is 1 megabit per second. We'll explain why after we've gone through the example. That is, I'm going to send my data frame at this data rate, I'm going to send the ACK frame at this data rate, much lower. The main reason is so that other people can hear no matter what data rate they use. We'll explain that more later. So, given that, the data frame is 1341 plus 34 bytes, which is 1375. 1375 bytes transmitted at 11 megabits per second is 1341 bytes plus the header of 34, 1375 bytes, convert the bits times by 8, 11,000 bits divided by 11 megabits per second, 11 million, 0.001 second to transmit our data frame, which is 1,000 microseconds. The transmission time of our data frame in this example is 1,000 microseconds. Similar, the ACK, 14 bits times by 8 is 112 bits. Transmitted at 1 megabit per second is 112 microseconds. Let's make my life easier, and instead of, say, 112, let's round it to 100, okay? It's actually 112 in this case, but those numbers become hard to deal with when I'm adding up. So just let, it's 100 microseconds to transmit the ACK frame, 1,000 to transmit the data frame, and we have a diffs of 50, a short interframe space of 10, slot time of 20, all in microseconds. And that's why I chose payload size of 13410, just this value here. So now we'll keep going on the board and illustrate what happens. We'll draw over time what happens for those three stations. A, access point, and B. So, at time zero, so time is increasing as we, let's say this is time zero. At t equal to zero. At time zero, client A has data to send to the access point. So it starts at normal procedure of check, is idle? And it must be idle for this period of diffs, 50 microseconds in this case. Now, in our scenario, no one else is transmitting. B wants to has data to transmit at 220, access point at 1420, assume there's no one else around. It means, okay, imagine we start counting a timer. Idle. Okay, count down from 50 microseconds down to zero. If the medium is idle for that entire period, then we can move on to the next stage. And in this case, no one is transmitting for that 50 microseconds. So we'd say that, okay, if this is the period of diffs, then we would complete the diffs period. A or B and access point are not transmitting, which they will not be in this case because this is time. If this is zero, this is, no one is trying to transmit up until time 220. Therefore, no one will be transmitting in the first 50. So that's the first step completed. So the next step is to do the back off. And the back off period, again, varies. And the way to determine the back off period is choose a random number between 0 and some upper limit. The back-off period, it's on the slide, is a random number between 0 and some upper limit, CW, times by the slot time. Choose a random number between 0 and CW, and times that by the slot time, where CW changes. It's initially CW min. It may increase up to CW max. So in our case, because this is the start, CW equals 31. Slot time is 20 microseconds. Choose a random number between 0 and 31 and times it by 20. And that will give us our back-off period that we have to wait. In this case, my client chose random number 10. Okay? So I choose the random number times by our slot time of 20. So I need a back-off period of 200 microseconds. So, again, we think we start counting down. And we count in terms of slots. So random number of 10 means I need to back off for 10 slots. Each slot is 20 microseconds. So I could draw that. We start at this time after diffs is completed. If I broke that into slots of 20 microseconds, this is 20, 20, 20, we can think that, okay, if I choose a random number of 10, then let's count down in terms of number of slots. Start at 10. Okay, first slot time is finished. That'll be down to 9. After another slot time, we've got 8 to go. After another slot time, we've got 7 to go, and so on. That is, we need to back off for 10 slots, or 200 microseconds. One way to think about that is just counting down in terms of number of slots. We'll see why it's important or useful to think about it that way when we see someone interrupt this back-off period. So that would potentially finish one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10 slots. If we start at 10 and count down every time we complete one slot, then when once we get to 0, then we've finished the back-off period. Which would be a time 250. Because if this started at time 50 and it took 200 microseconds, it would finish 250. But we need to be careful because the medium must be idle for the entire period. If the medium is not idle, if someone else is transmitting, then we have to interrupt this backup. Let's check. Client B starts at time 220, or has data to transmit at time 220, which is somewhere around here. Remember, this is distributed. The other client B doesn't know what stage client A is in. All it can do is hear other transmissions and know when the medium is idle and busy. So client B at this time has some data to send to the access point. It starts the same procedure. Diffs checks whether the medium is busy. If it's not, it must be idle for that period of the 50 microseconds. So the diffs would finish at this period, or at this time. If it was idle for 50, it would start at 220 and finish at 270. Remember, these things are happening at the same time. Now let's look what happens at client A. This is 50, 70, no one's transmitting. 90, 110, 130, 150, 170, no one's transmitting. Medium is still idle, that's good. 190, 210, no one's transmitting. 230, no one's transmitting. Note that client B is not transmitting here. They are waiting for that diffs period. So they have data to transmit, but they haven't started to transmit. So the medium is still on. Countdown gets to zero, that is, we reach time 250. From client A's perspective, we have completed the back off. The medium has been idle for that entire duration. We move into the next stage, which is transmit. That is, we start transmitting our data frame now. Let's go back and see what happens at client B then. So we could say, since A is transmitting, and once you start transmitting, you don't stop. That is, even if someone else is transmitting, there's no way to know that. Remember, a wireless device is either receiving or transmitting. During this period, we're in the receive mode. We're trying to listen to see if anyone else is transmitting during this period. Here, we switch into the transmit mode. Now we start to send. So we cannot be receiving at this point in time because we're transmitting. We can only do one, not both. So we're transmitting. Even if someone else started to transmit, they shouldn't, but even if they did, then this one would not hear that. So we have a transmission during this period. And let's assume A, access point, and B can all hear each other. They're all within range. So in effect, the medium is going to be busy for this period of time. I'll mark that here. You don't have to mark that on there, just to show that the medium is busy during that period of time from all stations' perspective. Of course, that's going to impact on B. The medium becomes busy at time 250. B had data to transmit at time 220, started to check whether the medium is busy. No, it's idle, it's idle, it's idle. It must be idle for 50 microseconds. It's idle for 30 microseconds. Then it becomes busy because A starts transmitting. And as soon as B detects this transmission, okay, we've changed status of the medium from idle to busy. We must wait until it becomes idle again, which is going to be here. And when it becomes idle again, we must start again. We must wait for the diffs and try. We'll do that once we get to this point in time. Similar, the access point would have to do the same if it had data to transmit. So, transmit the data. It takes 1,000. So we'd finish at time 1250. The numbers I'm putting here are just a count of time. Total time to transmit, 1,000. And it would be the same here, of course. That is, the medium would become idle again at 1250. Have we missed? What happens? All right, 1420, the access point, that's a little bit later. Medium becomes idle. Client B detects that, medium is idle, goes back to the start and starts the diffs. So this was the attempt to do the diffs. Of course, it did not complete. That is, the medium wasn't idle for that period, therefore we have to restart and do that again. Start to check that the medium is idle for the diffs period. 50 microseconds. We transmitted the data at the access point. The access point receives the entire data at this point in time. It's received. The procedure once you receive data is that you wait for a short interframe space, a SIFS, and then transmit an ACK. So, in this case, at the same time, B started to check that the medium is idle for the period diffs. access point waits for a short interframe space, the SIFS. This is always shorter than DIFS. In fact, as we see, this is 10, this is 50. So this would finish at time 1260. If we start the short interframe space at 1250, it lasts for 10 microseconds, it will finish at 1260. And as soon as the short interframe space is finished, we transmit the ACK. And the ACK is going to take 100 microseconds, so that would bring us to the time 1360. Come back to B, it's not going to finish the diffs. It started, medium is at time 1250, medium is idle at time 1260, of course the scale's not perfect here, at time 1260, after just 10 microseconds, we needed to have 50 microseconds, but after just 10 microseconds, the medium became busy again, because someone is transmitting. Someone's transmitting an ACK. Therefore, our diffs is interrupted. We must wait for the medium to become idle again, and then we'd start the diffs again. So we can see the first data frame has been successfully transferred. From client A's perspective, DCF interframe space, diffs, back off some random period of time, transmit the data. Once the data is received by the destination, it waits for a short interframe. Don't worry about checking whether the medium is idle. It will always simply wait for that short interframe space and then immediately transmit. The fact that the short interframe space is short, it's shorter than all the other interframe spaces, which means if there's ever a case where two people start this counter, this one has to wait for 10, this one for 50, the one that has to wait a shorter period of time will always get to transmit first. It's like giving priority. Whoever has the shorter time to wait will get to transmit first. Because this one will complete 10 and transmit, this one will complete 10 and detect someone else is transmitting. So, data, short interframe space, ACK. We're now finished that data transfer. At this point in time, 1360, client A knows that its data has been delivered to the access point. We will continue that this afternoon and see what happens. From B's perspective, we'll see that it will complete the diffs, choose a back off, try to transmit, but we'll have to take into account the access point also wants to transmit and see what happens there. So we'll continue that after the break or after in the last section today. Make sure you read the assignment. Try to form your groups because this afternoon I want to get the exact people who are in each group and give you group numbers and give you a little bit of a discussion about the assignment and a demonstration on IPERF. So let's continue in the afternoon.